Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Real Music Film Festival through February 16th at the Whitfield Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. On Thursday, January 31st, the Real Music Festival will screen the documentary Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band. This film investigates the history and present-day atmosphere of this special art form. Again, that's the Real Music Film Festival showing Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band on Thursday, January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Whitfield Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Whitzel Auditorium in Portland. Films showing this year include Mr. Soul, The Ballad of Shirley Collins, Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band, Gospel According to Al Green, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Whitzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial. This is Talking Earth. My name is Patrick Bocard, your host tonight for Talking Earth. And I have the good fortune to have in the studio with me a Malakov.
Hi, Patrick.
Ooh, hang on there. Tola, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, now you're on. Slight issues with technology there. You were, A. Malakov was born in Russia, moved to the United States in 1990, and switched to writing in English in 1993. His poetry collection, The Catalog of Broken Things, came out in 2016. Synonyms for Silence is forthcoming in 2019. Am I lying right now or not?
No, you are saying the truth.
I am saying the truth. That's good. You have been published by Kenyon Review, Iowa Review, Massachusetts Review, Atlanta Review, Bennington Review, and Tampa Review, among others. Malakov is the winner of various fiction and poetry contests and an Oregon Literary Fellowship. His translation of a Chekhov story was included by Knopf in their Everyman series. He co-edits the Inflectionist Review. Please visit him at amalakov.com. And you are here to read from your new book of poetry, Application of Shadows.
That's right. And thanks, Patrick, for having me here. It's always so much fun to come out and talk about poetry.
It's fun, especially on a day like today with we're celebrating the life of Martin Luther King.
That's true. Yeah, it's a big day.
But I feel like your poetry is very peaceful and actually fits the tone of the day.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think a lot of your poetry, well, it also has to do with perhaps I just step out of the way for a second and let you read some of your poetry first and let everyone experience it first.
Okay.
And then I'll talk.
That sounds good, Patrick. Thank you so much. And thanks to everyone who's out there listening, whether it be right now at 10 p.m. on Monday night or later in the recording. I appreciate your taking the time to do that. And thank you so much for your interest in poetry and for tuning in. So, my collection, Application of Shadows, contains five poems. Three are pretty long and two are medium length. And so that's also the case with my first collection that came out before, that called The Catalog of Broken Things, whereas my third one will have more shorter poems. But to get back to this one, my second collection, Application of Shadows, I'll begin by reading this poem called Survivor's Guilt. And it's one of the shorter ones in this book, Survivor's Guilt. You raise your hand and the moon is back. In the forest, a tree falls, its roots centuries old, my mouth its own witness. My silence lies black upon the land. But if I say the wrong words, darkness will have its way too soon. You are not in this scene. Imagining is my way of touch. You are the tree. The river and the sky speak the same language. Years don't change, but we shrink. I remember your glazed eyes, bony hands, smiles addressed not to me, but to something bigger. Darkness is warm in my mouth. The tree listens to my breath. The moon drops its anchor in the river. You raise your hand and the river stands still. In the mirror, everything is like yesterday. Your wrinkles smooth. If I said the right words, I would know a way out. My mouth is its own weapon. If I scream, the emptiness is more true. You dropped anchors in my eyes to pull on me forever. Serpentine thoughts climb, the sky blinks. I remember your thin arms, bony shoulders. A universe dries in me, a dead oasis of stars. The mirror sings, its shards fall back into place in my cheeks. You and I share the same body. Trees linger in growth as in fall. Years shed like fluff, and the mirror, its weight upon me, faces waiting to become true, faces of the future dead. My own time is soft in my mouth. If I stop speaking to you, darkness will swallow you faster.
I read a review. It wasn't a review. It was a comment that's on your page on amolotkov.com about this book, about how a lot of your work, and I didn't really think about it until now, until today, I was going over it. It's about absence. It's about transience, actually. That things can just fall away like that.
I think that's true. I think that may stem from my background, you know, coming from the USSR at the age of 22, and being born in a dark place like that, a place where human rights didn't really matter, a place where your freedom could be taken away from you for no good reason. And so, I do feel a somewhat melancholy disposition on life. I believe I've developed this notion of grieving in advance. So I grieve people in advance sometimes, even those who are still with me. And of course, I grieve people whom I lost, like my mother. And that contributes to a very reverent attitude I hold to the human life, to our lives, and the meanings we make with them. So you're right, I do think about those matters fairly often.
And also, the other thing, I mean, I've commented on this before, because you were part of a movement called the Inflectionist Movement that isn't the idea that, or we need a more organic poetry that respects the reader and leaves space for the reader to come to their own conclusions.
Exactly.
And I mean, obviously, reading that poem, it's definitely, you also use a lot of white space on the page as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you definitely were, that definitely have, you've stuck with that in that poem.
Yes, thank you.
I love the, if I stop speaking to you, the darkness will swallow you for faster. It just makes me think of a number of different interpretations that I'm not going to throw at the listeners out there, because that's unfair.
Appreciate it. And I do like to give my listeners and my readers the opportunity to make their own interpretations. And to that degree, I leave some things unresolved or unsaid. And definitely that's an approach that interests me, both as a reader and a writer. Not over-explaining. So thanks for noticing that, Patrick.
Okay, so I'll keep my interpretations myself for a little while.
You're welcome to share them anytime you want.
Well, yes, but trying to think. Sorry, I was trying to think of a. Well, you know what? I have some empty space. Radio is anti-white space or empty space. Dead air is the nightmare of every radio show host on the planet. So I guess I may actually mention my interpretation of that final line that I just lost, that if you stop speaking about someone, they will become anonymous and therefore forgotten.
That's true. And the way you phrase it, I think it also acquires some political connotations that are very important in this age where human lives are not valued everywhere. And even here domestically, for the last couple of years, they're valued less and less. So we do need to keep track of each other and make sure that we don't write somebody off prematurely.
And your mouth, my mouth is its own weapon. Love that line too.
Thank you.
And the irony is that it, or it's not even ironic. If I scream, the emptiness is more true. It's that you prove the emptiness around you by screaming.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to think of it. It's so rewarding when people keep finding the different interpretations that they can find behind the words. I love that. But definitely the poem talks about absence and missing somebody and losing someone important to you.
Well, did you want to read another poem out of the?
Absolutely. I'll continue with a slightly longer poem that's called Time and Absence. And this actually dates from a few years back. Some of these poems were written earlier, some a little later. A couple of Portland friends might have heard me read from this one, so that's good. Hopefully they'll recognize a few words. This one is called Time and Absence. 18 people died as I said this line. May someone remember them. Let's count silences. Let's share absence. On the vast snowfield of life's empty page, our words are grains of sand. How much sand does it take to defeat entropy? And yet, we are a story that took 14 billion years to write itself. And I wonder about all that sand, all that snow. I wrap myself in a cloud and float away like that kiss from years ago. Nothing bothers me. The silence empties itself into the cup of your hand, and time is useless. When nothing remains, I wrap myself in a cloud and float effortless. I'm a map, a memory, a life. I'm a meaning. Have a chance to rust. Have a nice go with it.
Let your molecules oxidize, release, control. There will be more of you, more of everyone. Let time envelop you, swallow you, release your atoms, exchange thoughts with laughing water drops as you acquire color. Celebrate silence. Remain cheerful as you disappear. A melody doesn't exist all at once. We hear a memory, enjoy an absence. We pretend that the past is a living reference, that the moments comprising our lives make sense as a whole, that a note ago we were the same, that a song feels our presence, that a chord struck at birth still rings true when we die. We believe that a melody remembers us. Explosions knock the world off its feet as if everything is too late. The smell of absence. Why do I think my eyes are the right ones, no matter the distance? Too late to change your life at your age? Too late for anything? Let's be silent. Can I exchange my thoughts for yours? The wolves are in the kitchen. When mysteries dissolve into promises, what is left? Why should my voice be the right one, no matter the silence? Let me carry your bags through the mirror and through history until dawn do us part. And then I step out of my mind and sense the sadness, your lip twitching just so. The crow on my bag begins to sing to its own definition of music, and the weight of time on my eyes subsides. I stretch my arms toward you, and in the distance between, I find a mirror in which our reflections can laugh at themselves. My absence is a ticket for your memories, like a story that struggles to complete itself. I remember everything you didn't say. Let me think of you on each page, all at once, not moment by moment. Do I need your permission to witness you? Do you need mine? We are born remembering. Empty moments turn me on the corner of my being as I stop to consider the possibility of being absent. It is the absences that slide sadly through time as if memories were transparent. Let me empty myself as well so I can pass through the eye of the missing needle that stitches the past and the future together in this transparent moment. Escape slowly like wind from a bottle. The word is not afraid, and neither is the light. If distances are longer than we thought, you should not collapse. Get your folded life in line for your birthday. You must match expectations you don't understand. Listen and speak when you hear silence. Spark, if you can spark, let me hear you. When I step outside, let me be alone. Let me be with you. I last saw my mother 7 years ago at the airport, a receding figure, there, gone, re-emerging for a second, gone. In darkness, in silence, we can establish if it's all worth it, if the past is worth the future, and vice versa. It's easy to imagine myself in her place. I cooked her a meal one morning, fried bologna and potatoes she used to make me when I was a child. And now, with mortality in mind, I replayed the gesture. Each time we make a choice, we are closer to the moment when we have no choices left. Years receding, summers disappearing without a trace. Memory, the only place she lives. Memory, the only gift I can give her. In my worst case scenario, the wolves are in the kitchen, the candle is lit. In my worst case scenario, we have a fight, then one of us dies. In my worst case scenario, I wake up and nothing is ready for the day. And there is no day. In my worst case scenario, the freeway comes to an end, but you don't notice. You will keep driving for as long as I remember you. May your trip be long. Drift, drift, let the world imagine you. Someone loves you all life long, but has no part of you. A memory of silence, encyclopedia of mysteries, a rainbow of darkness. Someone you wanted desperately is not in your life. Let the world drift through you as it chooses its stories. If I had access to my body, I would dance a slow dance with myself to remind me that even shadows sleep, even shadows dream. Every night I sleep with my shadow. If my body inquired, "Who are you?" I would respond, "I remember how it was before I had weight." We used to share our days, but in this afterlife, it's harder to keep in touch. On my map, the past is on the left, future on the right. I must be careful to avoid spoilers. The scale of my map is subject to my mood at each moment. You might have to drive 12,000 miles to cross an hour. Green lines are for living memories, red lines for dead ones. Large bodies of blue for destinies being conceived and collapsing into their own intentions. Large bodies of white for those of us still asleep. Missing lines for your thoughts. Dotted lines for absence. Marveling at the possibility of gravity, I step carefully in case my feet touch the ground. If this air contained oxygen, I would breathe. If I remembered myself, I would be less stunningly absent. Last time we met, you were a dead body. A bird out to sea exceeds speed limit, dies for distance. If the sea held water, I would emerge as a dolphin, watch myself from above as a crow. If I were here, I would fill the void of my body. Listen, make me listen to be. I don't know you, let me stay, let me imagine you from a distance. Disappear in light like so many fading suns, explode in silence. Memory in melting, death in promise, hope in melody. If whispers could touch your skin, I'd bathe you in a lullaby. Tell me all you know in one sentence. I unfold the ocean and let it spread over the table. The future doesn't bother me. You are floating there on a boat too small to see. I become one of those who watch you from the distance. Let me know if the years we have are enough for us. Can I express absence more vividly than by keeping silent? I fold the distance in half and then in half again until you close. I stay awake while you answer. I close the door behind you, but I'm the one outside. I change my mind, there is more to say, but the brass door handle breaks off in my hand. Childhood cat at my feet, no longer blind, smooth, shiny fur, as if time fixed what it breaks. My body neatly refurbished, cured of wrinkles and small pains. The cat walks away next to my younger figure. I watch them disappear. I don't notice my absence. Unlock the distance. Let the wolves escape from your kitchen. The word is not afraid, and neither is the light. Let my shadow fall upon your face, but only briefly. Water keeps flowing through your thoughts like dying unforgiven. Is absence measured in time or indifference? Does the crow on your back sing for you or those you left behind? You are a witness to some of my life. I don't know you, but will you kindly finish my story? Unlock the silence. There are no wolves. It was just something I said. The sand, the snow. I draw a few continents on a paper napkin, and those who live there don't realize how flimsy their ground is. Can you refresh all my memories at once? Can everything explode in slow motion? Say nothing in my mind. Keep your distance. In my worst case scenario, I die as I say this last word. Whisper me into space. I want the darkness of galaxies to converge on me. List my name in a catalog of falling stars on a page whose number is unimaginable. I insist on being a part of an infinite queue of digits. I demand a microscopic space within the reign of light years. Make me a smiling atom hiding in a friendly molecule. Remember me into darkness. Imagine me into silence.
This was Time and Absence.
You have been listening, or you are listening to A. Malakov read from his new book, his recent book, Application of Shadows, which has four poems in it. And you just heard Time and Absence, which is a... how would you describe that? It's not an epic. What kind of a sort of a poem would you say it is? It's meditative, philosophical, but...
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's one of the more abstract of my poems. This is one where I threw many statements together that perhaps don't make direct sense or don't make a direct correlation. And the connections between many statements that follow each other, to me anyway, is just intuitive. And so in that way, I think I examine more or less the same topics that other poems examine: grief, loss, distance, disconnection, alienation, but in a somewhat more abstract way. It's as if you compared a realist painting of the same landscape with one that is a cubist or an impressionist painting, the different tools one uses. So in this one, I took maybe more risks and just throwing out these outlandish statements on the page and seeing if they'll work together. Now, I don't know what category that makes, but that's more of an explanation of how I went about it.
It felt chiseled to me.
Mm.
And maybe that's the just having the white space around the...
I suppose so. And I phrases. Moved them. Mm-hmm. And I moved stuff around a lot. I was interested in having recurring statements and reused words to tie it together, because it doesn't really have a plot as such. A couple of other longer poems in this book have more of a, not so much a plot like you would have in a novel, but more of a set of characters and things that actually happen. And this one is just a really strange poem, I admit that, and so I just wanted to experiment in that direction.
I enjoyed it very much, though.
Thank you, Patrick.
Well, earlier today we were talking, and I mentioned that a poet that I like a lot who used to write really long poems that used white space as well, although he was more narrative, Frank Beidart.
Yes, I really appreciate his work, and I think he does have formal concerns with his work. I do remember reading some of his longer works that you mentioned, but also he would be doing things like two lines, three lines in some of his poems to kind of create these strange sounding and bits of sound of different sizes. So I really think it's interesting what he does with line breaks, among many other things.
He gets hung up on punctuation. I heard somewhere that he had this long poem that was finished, basically, but he couldn't finish it because he couldn't figure out what punctuation to use at the end of one line. And he finally came up with a semicolon and a dash or something like that.
That's a radical solution.
Yes, it was a radical solution, but it took him a while. But maybe that could be Apocrypha and completely wrong. I mean, maybe that would be great if Frank Beidart called me up and was like, you were wrong about that. Apologize on air. I would love that, since I've never spoken to him or heard him read, actually, which is unfortunate.
I haven't heard him read either, but I'd like to. I'm not sure where he lives, but it's not here in the Northwest.
He's northeast, I believe. He was teaching I think Massachusetts, but I might be wrong. But I know he lives in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm. But thanks for bringing him up. I've learned a lot from his work, so definitely would recommend his work to others.
Trying to think if you... how about... Can I just ask... So you are writing a memoir at the moment. You're almost done.
That's true. I'm writing a memoir that's entitled A Broken Russia Inside Me. And I'm done with writing it, with collecting text for it. I'm working on revising the last quarter of it or so.
And is it... It's about your life when you were in Russia or after, or...
It's about both. It has to do with some of the more unusual and strange events that happened to me in the Soviet Union, such as being in the Soviet military for 2 years between 1986 and 1988, and more outlandish and unexpected events that happened to me, but also things that led me to the choice of leave the USSR and to come to the United States, and some of my struggles here in the States. So it covers both of those periods, but mainly focuses on the choice to immigrate and what caused it and what the consequences of it were.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to reading that.
Thank you.
That sounds very interesting. As well as, also curious about your novel that you're working on, too. Are you still working on Slight Curve?
A Slight Curve is pretty much finished. I handed it over to my agent. She's trying to currently sell the novel before that. So the Slight Curve hasn't actually been put on the market yet, but I think it's... hopefully at some point it will be, and hopefully people out there will actually be able to go and buy a book of it. I think Slight Curve is maybe a somewhat more likely novel to succeed than the one that's being sold right now, so we'll see. I'm not going to speculate.
You have another novel that you're getting published right now?
Yes, my previous novel that I'd written before that is called The Escaping Truth. And so that's what my agent is now trying to sell. Then the next novel is in the queue. I'd written more novels in the past, but they were more experimental novels, whereas these two are pretty much realist fiction. I'm 50 now, so in my 40s I've discovered that I was getting tired of the avant-garde and of the experimental writing and began gravitating back toward just a human story that makes an impact, that moves me. And so the last two novels are just, you know, novels, regular novels, and hopefully folks out there will be able to see them sometime.
Oh, well, hopefully sometime when they're published, I'll have you read some of it if you want.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
That'd be great. Did you want to read from your earlier book too, or you want to just read from if you read another one, I mean, we need to make sure that they want to buy they have to buy the book.
Right.
I had a guest a while back from West Virginia, I believe, and I asked her to read another poem. She's like, I want them to buy the book. I don't want them to I don't want to give away too much.
Well, that's a good point. Maybe I should just read from this book, because I'd already been here on this show by your kind invitation with my first book, and I think it's probably available online. So I don't want to do the same stuff that's already
done
on your show before.
Okay.
So maybe I'll just stick to this book and, read a few.
Yeah, we got about 20 minutes or so. So,
so I have this... kind of short-ish, a 4 minute or so sci-fi poem called The Persistence of Music. Now, you don't usually probably run into sci-fi poems, and this was just something I wanted to try out and see how this would work in the poetic format. It's called The Persistence of Music. I'm very honored by the fact that the Massachusetts Review picked it up for their special music issue, and in fact chose to conclude the issue with this poem. So I read it, and you'll make your own determination whether or not it has anything to do with music. The Persistence of Music. Yesterday, blue rain fell on me. I found my hair on the pillow, lovely beige clumps, dry like distance. I remember your hands running through it. I'm on read-only access. There is nothing unique about being archived. Next upgrade may be my last. I recall your final breath drawn through the tube, the DNA collector's smile as I waited. You are pure data now, immune to time as my memory fades. They say the outer planets are more hospitable to my kind, but I'm loath to leave this place we shared. Maybe I should sing again, but who would listen? My survival stock drops daily. Tomorrow, an afterthought. Your DNA reveals compassion skills, something I have always valued. I noticed you first in the maintenance line, handing out plugins. Your smile, patient and kind, the way you paid attention to everyone, even lower grade aliens. You reminded me there are still songs to sing. Without you, I don't know how to be me. I lack self-confidence. I doubt my uniqueness index. The very thing you used to like about me. Is a song too small, cowardly? Can music matter to those in pain and beyond pain? Your DNA descends from Homo sapiens. How old-fashioned. To me, you were breathtakingly beautiful, no matter your origins. You wanted me to sing, not for you, but for myself and those who can hear. You made my future possible. You helped me, even as your own future was coming to an end. You'd mentioned a pending upgrade, but I ignored you. My blindness
bites, chews at me, am knee deep in song. I wish we could replay with full audiovisual feedback. Rewind. You were the all of all. And even this doesn't say enough. You were the only path, and you ended. I opened myself to what you lacked in me, to the way you wanted me to be. One of the outer planets will be named after you, preserved in thought and harmony so others can fondly say you, not knowing it's you. I love you more since you were shut down. You tick in me without winding. I know you bit by bit. I learn from your absence. My mouth is dry, my vocal cords atrophied, yet I sing.
I think the reader's going to have to decide if that's about music or not. It's about singing.
Well, I think it's a little bit about human rights, especially in these days that we live in. But in the human rights from this strange futuristic angle.
Even lower grade aliens?
It's kind of a not politically correct way of speaking about those aliens in the future of my poem.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend them.
No, I mean that the way I speak of them is not politically correct, not the way you spoke about them. Because I think in a politically correct future, low-grade aliens would be referred to by some kind of more respectful term. But, you know, this is the moment.
But they would still be treated like lower...
Well, that's a good question. How would they be treated? I hope they are treated equally to everybody else. I guess we'll see.
I think first we'd have to find them. Or they have to find us, rather.
Probably. We'll just have to wait till we see the future. And in the meantime, do our political battle and try to get the scary man out of the White House.
Yes. Beam him up, Scotty. Sorry, I had to go there. We live in interesting times. It's an ancient Chinese curse.
Yeah, and of course, as a Russian immigrant, Soviet immigrant, I didn't expect America to go this route. So I'm really shocked. But, you know, I'm optimistic. I think things will improve.
We've had our little, yeah.
Right.
We've had things happen before. We haven't had something go this south, though. But
sure, I read a lot about the Nixon times. That was before my time. So that, I guess, is the first comparison that comes up, right?
I don't know. I just remember disliking Bush 1 or disliking Reagan, sad that Dukakis lost, disliking Bush 1, being happy Clinton won, realizing Clinton wasn't perfect. I didn't vote for Clinton at all. I voted third party both times. And then, someone's calling up to complain, I think. Uh-oh. Do you have something to read so I can talk to the person on the phone?
Sure. Do you want me to just read until the end or just read a little?
If it'll fit, yes.
Okay, well, I can start reading from this longer poem that concludes the book. It's called Skating Without a Soul. And I'll read some selections. So it looks like I'll have room for about half, maybe halfish,
okay,
of what we got. But feel free to interrupt me if you have any more questions.
Okay.
So this one is called Skating Without a Soul, and it's prefaced with an epigraph by John Sibley Williams, my friend and co-editor in the Inflectionist Review. And the epigraph goes like this: The clockmaker lies on a bed, surrounded by time, in various broken states, and thinks of what he might see if he looked out the window. In some way, the poem is an answer to what he might see, or maybe not. The shopkeeper at the used souls store is out of stock on creative personality.
Will good with money do? He asks. I have a life to finish, you say, knowing how lungs betray you in the end. Money won't help me there. A second later, you confess. I don't even have enough to buy a soul. He stares sadly. The living and the dead line the shelves, each soul wrapped in plastic, unclaimed. When you lost your own soul, he asks, how did it feel? You don't answer. You are not here to explain the world, but to make it more inexplicable. You gave your love 3 futures when you left, but your love kept just one. Where did the others go? The cleaning lady lives on the street corner. Her telescopic eyes seek out beings like you. Your memories are cleaned out one day at a time for a small fee for the rest of your life. After all, you must let them go in the end. Without her help, you have too much to carry. By the time she's done, your past is quite improved, at least for an hour or two. You've forgotten your mother, your father, your lost loves, your dead children. You might as well return and start again. But without a soul, you can't return. The moving truck driver has spent years making sure her truck keeps running in case it's ever needed. She has a new blood disorder. Moving is a common way to pretend that death has not yet filed the papers to claim us. The driver stays alert at all hours, hoping for a client. All clients have died. She is reluctant to accept this. Her own death is closer than you think, and you think it's quite close. The little boy on the corner has been silent since he learned to speak. There is nothing he'll commit to. Everything we say proves wrong before we utter the last syllable, yet we long for truth. You've been saving your food rations to bribe the boy. You want to know his story. The dream of skating is embedded in your mind, though you haven't skated for years. You can't wait to get to the rink. You cough as you think of it. Distances grow, take controls of our plans, wrap us in their gray blanket of irrelevance. You decide to go tomorrow, and if not tomorrow, the day that most resembles tomorrow. The ballerina has retired, but she retains her elegance. When she walks, her toes long to stand on their tips. Her memories dance brighter than she herself used to dance. Every day, she walks to the theater, sits in an empty row, stares at the stage. An empty stage is a possibility, an open door, a play waiting to unfold using us as actors. Her beautiful smile transcends history. This may or may not be the last time you see her.
If I could interrupt.
Sure.
We had a phone caller who asked, had the question whether you, and I kind of knew the answer, didn't tell him, because I figured we'd tell him on air, that whether you would actually ever read over music.
Yes, I like to perform with musicians every now and then. In fact, if you go on YouTube, you can find my YouTube channel under A. Molotkov, and that includes some readings that were done with musicians. Just recently, we did some pieces from this same collection at Broadway Books here in Portland, Oregon, with Jerry Bobby, who is a
a tremendously talented cello player. His credits are about 100 times longer than my list of credits. He's played with symphony orchestras and chamber pieces in different cities in the United States. It's just awesome. And so I was honored to have him play with me. That's available on YouTube, as well as I think my recording with Reagan Lindy from a couple of years ago, and maybe a couple of other things. So, yes, there's definitely a different edge that comes out.
And I have to say that the first time you were on Talking Earth, I think there was music involved as well.
That's true. I'm just reminded of that. That's right.
We had to use both rooms. Mm-hmm. There was, I think you were in this room, and a couple people were in this room, and like five people were in the other room.
Something like that. We had a guitarist, Reagan Lindy on guitar, and Carrie Ann Kasich, Portland writer. She was also doing singing in that presentation. So that was a lot of fun. Thanks for reminding me.
And somehow we didn't blow an amp or anything.
I know. Not that we know, anyway.
I'm pretty sure. Did you want to keep going, or you want to? Do you want to find something to? We have about, I think we're looking at like 8 minutes now.
Sure, I can wrap it up in 8 minutes and just read some few selections from this poem. I'll continue reading from this poem entitled Skating Without a Soul. A ladybug lands on your hand and makes you cry. You thought they were extinct, yet it brings its cheerful dots to the world's eye, as if the world's eye cared. Are all good signs cancelled by indifference, or does their spark remain? The world will last forever, one step at a time, its beauty hidden in its dirt, and then redefined. You watch the ladybug twitch its wings and fly. You've never felt important, but now you are in the middle of a narrative, a main character. Time conducts an experiment on you, its dark hands deep in your blood, a story that won't let go. Your love is gone into some other distant future. You remember making all this up before it became true, before it became memory. You think the past is worth at least a moment of attention. The historian agrees with you, if only for a moment. He is compiling a full list of all times that have not been used to their full potential. It's a long list. He was almost finished, but time keeps moving, and we keep lacking. You wonder if your own story will be part of the new history. You are depressed, but you know, suicide is an unfair claim on the narrative. Right here, in the corner of your silence, your future sets traps for you. All carefully grown, lustrous loves must fall before our lives have seeped through the hourglass. Your love took another path. Your love is unaccountable to you like the rest of your life. You've learned that happiness is not a state to strive for, not something in the future. It's something already there and lost. The shopkeeper asks questions, mostly inappropriate. What do you hope to find here? What was your soul's name? You can't wait to go skating when the time is right. You are tired of souls as a topic. You hesitate to explain. Our names are lost the moment we are not there to claim them. Their syllables melt. When you are gone, will he remember you fondly? Will he still be around to remember? The boy accepts your bribes, but his silence remains complete. There is no way to gauge your progress. Does he even understand your request? You want to know what he thinks about the future, but you fear
he has no time even for the present. His shadow leaps into action. You see shadows moving fast, turning street corners all over the city as if on purpose. You realize his lips will never part in speech, because this answer is the most accurate. You want to fly like he does, but you can't. The ballerina no longer dances bodily, only mentally. Her elegant gray cells stretch, leap faster, brighter than her body ever did. Sometimes a metaphor is more accurate than what it stands for if you let it dance. You wonder if trusting the body so completely was a mistake or a plan on the ballerina's part. You wonder if there is a difference between mistakes and plans. A ladybug lands on your hand and makes you smile. You thought they were extinct. You thought all good signs had been turned off, their neon melted into longing. And then you remember, this has already happened. Maybe nothing is ever unique. Our thoughts, our lives are identical to themselves, drawn from a small library. The world around us will last forever in one form or another, full of its chances and its grace. You let the ladybug go. You wonder which of you will survive the other. The skating rink owner is out of work since they turned the power off. Ice is reduced to memory. Glass blades emerged where skate blades wrote long love letters in the language of the past, their shady futures destined to fail. No one will convince you that all hope has expired, faded at the root like desert blooms. The past still works miracles within you. You put your skates on and glide. Thank you, Patrick, and thank you, everybody, for tuning into this.
You have been listening to A. Malakoff read from Application of Shadows, his new book of poetry, which is available at your website.
It's available from my website and also from the publisher Main Street Rag.
And perhaps other bookstores soon?
It's probably in a couple of stores here in Portland. It's kind of low distribution, so Main Street Rag distribute themselves. My first and third collections will be easier to find on Amazon and elsewhere. But this one is easier to get from the publisher or myself.
But Amazon has some issues right now, so we don't want to...
That's true.
We got to be careful about that.
I don't want to endorse them. It's up to everybody.
Well, I'm not even endorsing. I was just thinking that he's getting divorced, so...
That's true.
Chaos.
Chaos.
Yeah, you can't have everything you need there. thanks again to my guest, Anatola Malakoff, for coming on. This has been Talking Earth. You are listening to KBO Portland 90.7 on your FM dial. Next month, on the second Monday of the month, I'm going to have Rima Zaman read from her new memoir, I Am Yours. It was a great interview. I already recorded it last week. And then the week after that, Barbara LaMorticella is coming back. So I will let everyone know about that. But Barbara LaMorticella is coming back to the Talking Earth.
Yay.
Next month, the third Monday of the month. I can't remember exactly today. I know the Rima Zaman show is on February 11th. And we are going to go to the next show. Here comes Gremlin Time.
K-Book Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd at the Milagro Theater in Portland. La Segua is a Central American cautionary folktale of a young, beautiful woman whom philandering men encounter on their way back home. Her beauty decays into a horror that drives the men mad. The play tells the story of a beautiful woman who was haunted by the specter of La Segua and takes a hard look at Costa Rican values, including ambition, hypocrisy, and follows themes of machismo, vanity, and narcissism. Again, that's La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater. Monday, January 28th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen Kick-Ass, the story of an unnoticed high school student and comic book fan who one day decides to become a superhero, even though he has no powers, training, or meaningful reason to do so. This screening benefits Transitions Project. Again, that's Kick-Ass, showing Monday, January 28th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland, community radio for the Pacific Northwest. Stay tuned at midnight for Joe Wood. Right now, it's the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time.
Good evening, this is Fortunato. Tonight, we're going to present a steampunk pastiche mashup as we take the anti-hero of Jules Verne's 19th century techno-thriller 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Captain Nemo and his fabulous submarine boat, the Nautilus. And in this corner, the creation of Howard Philip Lovecraft for the horror pulp magazines of the 1920s and 1930s, the God Monster.